Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are getting ready for football on Sunday. The Ravens beginning the season around here. But, you know, I have to talk a little Ravens with this guy before we get out. We get to do the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the 16th at the Beaumont. I will have some pressure lucks and lucky sevens. I do have a handful of these left. I will have the Ravens scratch-offs. I know it's Ravens season, but I still want to talk some baseball here and certainly the business of what's going on with the Orioles, amongst other things. This guy was involved with the Baltimore Orioles, oh, four decades ago, running things on the business side during the Edward Bennett Williams, Larry Lucchino era and the first bricks of Oriole Park at Camden Yards, lo these 33, almost 34 seasons ago now. We welcome our defending champion and sports professor of all things sports professoring at Georgetown University. We welcome Marty Conway back onto the program. No Springsteen concerts for you and me here in this fall, so we just got to stick with football and baseball, I guess, at this point, right? But maybe go to the Bananas game or something.
Yeah. No, actually, I also want to say that to you personally, I've come to realize since Springsteen has been off and around, I've gotten more into Billy Joel music, and I totally miss that. I tell you, I miss that in my music appreciation. I'm only getting to it now, and I know it's very late.
You've never done Billy Joel? You did one or the other? You're one of those guys?
Yeah, well, yes, probably. Yeah, that's the best
way to
describe
it. There was a lot of that in New York at that time amongst people, maybe your ages. It was sort of rivalry that I don't understand. I was too young for that. Like, to me, Billy Joel was... it's still rock and roll to me, and like Piano Man, and Springsteen was like for my parents. Like Springsteen in 79, 80 was very like not cool amongst the heavy metal set, but I love Billy Joel before I love Springsteen.
I missed on that. I'm willing to admit that now. I missed.
I said to my wife 2 nights ago, I'm like, I should have seen Billy Joel more at the Garden. You know, I saw him probably 8 or 9 times over the, but I should have gone 12 or 15. Baseball. All right. I mean, I didn't last time I talked to you, like I think it might have been May. I mean, they might not even have been in trouble the last time we talked. Last time we talked, it's like, hey, they're still a competitive team that could turn. Brandon High might have still had a job at the time we talked. a lot has happened here. I just want to give you 50,000 feet because you look at it differently than me, and I care a lot, and I'm pissed and stuff, but you still know people that work there. You still love the Orioles. You still know the business of it, and you were the guy like Janet Marie or others that are alive enough to say, hey, I conceived Camden Yards. How are we going to get this thing full again and fix it? Because I know it's in your heart and spirit to want, like it is mine, even though Katie Griggs doesn't believe that and David Rubenstein and Mark Fine don't believe that. All I want them to do is be great. I don't want to be their complaint department like the Baltimore Banner's been lately.
Yeah, well, yeah, so to your point, it just needs to be reinvigorated. It's always been there. I think we've been on shows in the last 15 years where I said, you know, that period of 11 or 12 years or whatever it was where they went without a winning season and all that, people thought, well, they're missing a whole generation of fans. No, they weren't doing that. There's a lot of Oriole fans still today. I've said this before, they just come less. They're less frequent when the team isn't performing well. The person that comes 5 or 6 times a year comes twice or 3 times. So there's a lot to that. But then also the physical plant of Oriole Park at Camden Yards needs to be modernized, which I know some of that, which is underway with the dollars that are coming from the state of Maryland. There'll be a whole new sound and video system. There'll be a dining area behind home plate where the press box is and things like that. But the physical plant around it also has to modernize so that there's a reason for you to be there 200 days a year instead of, you know, 6 games or whatever it is it needs to come out to the economy. There was a vision, and again, I'm not the vision person for Camden Yards, clear, but there was a vision that the ballpark would connect all the way up Utah Street, Howard Street, all the way up that corridor.
It was
and
a
that it
gateway
would just,
to the city
yes,
in a sense,
exactly.
Conceived as such.
Exactly. And that didn't happen primarily because you can see where the boundary of Oriole Park stops and where you were hoping, I guess, that private enterprise would pick up.
Was going
and
to
take
walk up Utah
play.
Street to the
Right.
Hippodrome, right?
Exactly right.
Okay.
And that just didn't happen.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, Marty. They had an owner who did not have any vision other than tunnel and himself and a mirror. And like, so that went on for 30 years. There was no cooperation. There was no any of that. And now with these new people, that's why I'm really, really pissed and disappointed as to them treating me like garbage personally, is I just thought this would be a new thing for everyone, that they would come in with a completely fresh approach and be all of this. Marty, one thing I would have said to you a year and a half ago, and I probably said it, is, well, at least they're not going to stink on the field. Like, at least they have a good team, right? Like, that's the thing that's really, really gone off the rails in the last 5 months here, was that this perception that they were going to be a contender for 4 to 6 years with TLC that was going to reinvigorate them to become the St. Louis Cardinals. We're not there yet. Matter of fact, they've gone the opposite direction, Marty. I mean, I talk to people on the streets here every day, people that gave Rubenstein money last October that aren't giving it to him this year.
Yeah, no, this is an important off season with the current administration. And look, to be, I think I've said this before. The worst thing that can occur to you in the off season is expectations that are beyond your roster. And teams, that just happens. But there's always ways that you can jawbone and lower those expectations and then try to exceed it. That didn't happen here. There was no sense of, hey, maybe, maybe we've got a bubble, like an inflation bubble occurring here, to do that. Because if you look at how the roster was built, aside from some of the core players, and even now you're starting to see, is Adley Rutschman, is he the guy, is he somebody that you're going to keep long term, or is now the time to actually perhaps get something in return for him? So pitching, injuries, there were a number of things that kept the roster from being as fulfilling as it could. And ultimately, it was just an incredibly poor start. I know it wasn't a, I was there for the, 0-21 start. In a lot of ways, again, the season was over within the first 2 weeks when you're 14 games under 500. For the Orioles this year, the season was over when they were 14 and 33 or whatever it was when Brandon Hyde got fired. So,
Was day before Preakness. I mean,
yeah,
literally,
exactly.
season's over May
Right.
15th. That's
That's right.
incredible.
Yeah. And then from there, you're hoping that the visiting team fans bring dollars. There were a lot of Red Sox fans there the other night. There were a lot of Astros fans. That's going to happen. So, yeah, that's the nature of the season. And you start selling, like I said before, there's a playing season and a selling season. And this year for the team, the selling season began, just a few weeks ago with saying, okay, here's what we're doing with tickets for next year.
Yeah, I was blessed to, and I know you knew Jim Henneman exceedingly well. I was blessed to, a couple weeks after his funeral, and I spent a goodly amount of time around a lot of old friends and people at his funeral. I ran into his son-in-law, had him on the show. Unwittingly, he runs marketing at 1623 Brewing out in Eldersburg,
Oh,
and
really?
Jimmy spent the end of his life with him. And the thing about ripping the Jim Henneman press box out to make a glass menagerie behind home plate, the glass menagerie is a great Phil Jackman reference too, who was once
I
doused
know.
by Earl Weaver in champagne with a shirt that said lifeguard on it. Back when they respected the media, back when you respected the media and
Right.
Larry and people respected the media, the press box getting thrown out of there. And look, I ain't sitting in it in any way. Mark Fine can have whoever he wants down there, and Jennifer Grandal and all of them. I don't, but the issue for me, as you said, Camden Yards needs to be modernized. And I'm old enough to remember that that wasn't the point. When Janet
I
Marie
know.
built it, the idea was to make it look like 1957, and that would get people my age, your age. My father was still alive then, so was my mother, was spry in 1992. Like, oh, look at the wrought iron, look at the steel, look at the retro, look at the retro. And then you and I have talked that, 15 years ago when the internet happened, they didn't have point of sale built in there. We've talked about how much cable, Comcast had to run to make 3D, 4D, HD, all the Ds work over the course of time. But when then they start farting with the fence and the outfield center field bar that they built there. I have not talked to Janet Murray on the record, off the record, anywhere. She's out doing her thing with the Dodgers. I see her moving around. She should be in the Oriole Hall of Fame. And I'll let you get onto your thing with that. But the notion that they're going to modernize the stadium and not take into account the aesthetic part of why it was built and what it was, I am fascinated to see what modern architecture is going to look like if Janet Marie's not involved or somebody who built it wasn't involved. And I know it pained you to see a scalpel taken to it at various points based on what it used to be. It's not appealing to 1940s people. I'm not saying that they're making it uglier or prettier or more functional. They need to make it a place people half of our age want to go a dozen times and do something more than drink beer. Like, I keep going back to this thing with baseball and even the bananas. Getting people to care about your sport, getting people to care about the team, getting people to be vested in the team, not vested in the bobbleheads or in the giveaways or in the beer drinking in the outfield. You go out there, you don't even watch the game. I don't know that that's conducive to them creating fans as I know it. And maybe you would say fans aren't important. You don't have to be a fan of Tom Cruise to go to a Tom Cruise movie. So I understand that, but they've eaten off of people like me doing things like sports radio and talking relief pitching and who's in the lineup and who's at the minors. Baseball talk, real baseball talk that the bananas don't have. That's fake. But staying in on the soap opera and being part of all of that. I there's the baseball part, and then there's the extended part, and then there's the I just need a night out drinking part. And what does it cost me? Like a concert I don't want to go to, or I get dragged to and just go. They need to be more than that to more people. And this repeat customer thing that you've talked about is about being into it. So I've left a lot there, but let's start with the stadium and the redo because you've seen the videos of it. You've seen what the Ravens have done to their stadium. Ravens tearing up the stadium doesn't mean anything because that stadium wasn't built as this retro thing, but are we done with retro? I mean, like everything that was built for, it doesn't need to be pretty anymore. It needs to print them money, right? It doesn't need to appeal to old farts that are dead.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about that. I think aesthetically, the ballpark will live as it is for 100 years, like Fenway Park, and it will be highly respected in that regard. Obviously, there's a modernization to the plant. I've talked about this before. Things that you would never see underneath that feed into concessions and merchandise and Wi-Fi and video boards and audio and all those different things.
You want to make the
Those.
music awesome in there, you got to make the sound system awesome,
But yeah,
right?
it just need to be something that people don't say, "No, what was that? I didn't hear what she said." Do that. So all that will occur, and those will be something that I think fans will notice and appreciate. If you go to a game, a football game, the sound system in the video leads the charge, right? It leads the fans into an experience,
Well,
and
every
they
player
are
has an
part of
at
it.
bat, and the one thing everybody's told me about the bananas is it's a disco. It's just a big giant disco of 30-second songs all night long, and that's what the kids want.
They do. Now, Major League Baseball is a different kind of product, so you have to temper that. But I think what we're talking about is outside the walls of the exterior, how far is that going to go? Is it going to go 100 yards, 200 yards? Which direction and what's going to be there? Because coming to the game itself is still an important experience. For some people, baseball is a religion for a lot of people. They love the routine of it, just like you go to the mass, there's a routine to it. But you need things that are on the exterior of that that make it interesting for people to, yes, come more often and come and stay longer and
That
do
mean
different
concerts,
things.
beer, the things that they're doing where bands are
It's
playing
a
the stadium
combination of
after.
things. Would there be three or four restaurants? Would there be other things that would be a part of it? If you look at everybody talks about the Battery in Atlanta, having been there a few times, talk about Cardinal Village in St. Louis, things like that that make it fit into the community on a more regular basis. Look, they tried with having Dempsey's as a restaurant there. They tried a few other things. It didn't catch in the way that it needs to, which is to make it part of the fabric of that part of town more frequently, as year-round type of opportunities, and have the ability not just to expect a developer to do it, but to work with development companies and make that an overall plan that feeds into what you're doing 80 times, 85 times a year when you're hosting either baseball games or the Savannah Bananas or whatever you're doing as a part of it, that it works together. Right now, it's a hard stop, right? Walk out to Camden Street, have the Hilton over there. There's no combination of that. There's
The
nothing that
harbor
makes
doesn't
that a
exist anymore as we knew it,
right.
right?
There's not a street festival every time there's a baseball game, that's what you need to have today in order to bring people who are under the age of 40 who think about their entertainment experience differently than people that are 45 and above.
So you're saying move pickles across the street?
I mean, bring it in. You don't have to be, but embrace it, figure out the way, what's the plan, how does that function with it? Not just that they do their business and we do our business. How do we do collectively our business? So look at what that looks like on opening day, that entire space. It should look like that virtually every game. That should be the kind of scene that you should see virtually every game. And it should be something that's cooperative so that there's a give and take on that, whatever that takes to do. But
Marty, come. I'm sorry.
that's okay. That takes a developer's mindset, not a baseball owner operator mindset who in the past, didn't even go to that many games.
Well, it's urban development,
Yeah,
right?
that's
It's not a
right.
baseball job, right?
That's right. It's a combination of that. The baseball has to be the center of it, but the urban development piece has to be spoke of. Again, 30 years ago when the ballpark opened, there was an expectation that that was going to happen, that it was going to be a catalyst for that activity. And it just didn't occur the way that I think the vision that some folks had.
The good Professor Marty Conway is here on the eve of Ravens and Bills this week. Happy Labor Day to everybody out celebrating, doing whatever they're doing here. Got nice weather, nice baseball weather, and all that. I'm not going to do a whole lot of football with you. I'm going to stay on the baseball thing. Do you have anything on the bananas you want to say? Because I've talked to a lot of people that actually went down to it. My wife and I abstained. I don't get it. And I was a Globetrotter guy as a kid or whatever. It's not for me. I guess if I had grandkids, I could be entertained by it, or it's a place to take the kids. I'll take them to the zoo. But my wife and I sat and watched it, and we pissed ourselves when how straight the announcers were. It was, it was like professional wrestling or roller derby or something in some sort of way. And when they start calling them the Nanners, and I mean, look, I was out the second day, and people just dressed in, like to your point, dressed in bananas gear, having dinner at Cooper's North up in Cockeysville, taking the light rail down like the bananas are the home team. And I it is a phenomenon. It's Taylor Swiftie for baseball, and baseball is such a, no offense to you or me or anybody loves it, such a dead thing that they've invigorated this thing in a way that
They have.
I would have thought it was amazing if they could sell out Bowie, sell 6,000 tickets for this fake baseball novelty event, but they've turned it into a marketing sensation using ESPN, using television, using everything that baseball built for 150 years, and then breaking all the rules. It's sort of making fun of baseball a little bit, sort of making fun of how stodgy baseball is.
Yeah, well, I use Jesse Cole in some of my classes around building culture, leadership, and things like that. When you look at that full history of what he and his wife did, of literally buying a team that was dead, the Savannah team, they were no place. He actually started in North Carolina in his early baseball career. But anyhow, I would encourage people to go out and pay attention to his story. But what I think you're going to see is, he's pretty adamant that they are not the Globetrotters of baseball. And I think he's right about this. What started with their team and one team for them to play against, sort of like the way the Globetrotters did, they now actually have four teams. They're going to expand next year to two more and have six teams. And they're going to have basically a banana ball league. And then who knows where that goes from there. And he makes a great point. A couple of years ago, Major League Baseball cut their draft from 50 rounds to 20. And he said, think about all the really, really, really good baseball players who no longer even have a chance at a professional career, let alone bringing in people from outside the US who simply want to play baseball and are willing to entertain people while they play baseball. And I think he's right about that. And I think there is a population, it's all about finding your audience. And they have found that audience with their irreverent way that they approach baseball. There are some things that baseball can learn from them, right? Every game is 2 hours. It's not whatever innings,
Oh
it's
man,
2 hours,
every mother
period.
I've talked to of their children who thinks baseball is cool is like, 2 hours is plenty for my 8-year-old. Plenty.
That's right. And so there's a lot of different elements to it. If a fan catches a foul ball, it's an out. Like there's some things that they've come up with that I think are interesting. And look, if you go to a Major League Baseball game now, from what you went th 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, you can tell the difference. The other day I was at a game. I got up to go to the bathroom and get something to drink. I missed an entire half inning because it went so quick, right? Getting players in and out of the box. And in the past, I might have missed an out or two to do that. So there's a lot of things that Major League Baseball, I think, has and will continue to learn from innovators like Jesse Cole. But I think it's more than a phenomena, and I think you're going to see it grow into a look. Baseball also a few years ago cut down on the number of affiliated teams from six to four. That left a lot of cities yearning for something interesting in baseball.
With an
They're
empty
going to move.
ballpark.
They're going to move Aberdeen's affiliate to Frederick for next year for the Orioles. Aberdeen's going to be something they call a draft league. You know, I don't know. Maybe people would be more interested in seeing a team that plays the Bananas five times a year, once a month, whatever it is. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity for them beyond just being the Globetrotters of baseball.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor of all things sports business at Georgetown University, and using Jesse Cole in his teachings. I hope to build something here after 35 years you can use in your teachings in some way. All right, here's the original teacher. You were a suit in baseball, you were an executive and all that. 83, you win the World Series. 88, you go into the tank. 94, you go on strike, right? They might be going on strike next year, so I'm going to tie that in and throw that part of this thing, or not strike, or a lockout, or the work stoppage. Let's use the right terminology here for Rob Manfred. But what's happened on the field this year, and what it means to this franchise long term, and this is where we're going to get sticky, and you and I are going to throw some mud. I had a show on Monday. I had Chris Corman out, sports editor of the Baltimore Banner. I had my buddy Bill Cole, my consigliere, and then my buddy Howard Scherr, who duck doctors. He's one of my oldest friends in the world. Met him at a Skipjacks game, 1984. He is a Birdland member, and he talked to me about it back in April, hopefully, and then he came out this week and said, "Man, I got over a grand left on my account, and I'm going to eat it." I'm like, "Eat it? I got a trip to the Caribbean. I book a hotel. If I don't do it, I buy the insurance and I can use the money next year." Southwest Airlines, as much as they're trying to screw up what they've built, what Herb Kelleher built, they still, if I miss the flight next week, my 180 bucks will stay for 6 months or a year and I get to use it. I was blown away. I just, as a consumer, and as a consumer, I must say this, Marty, I'm not their customer anymore. I'm not the guy that wants to go get the bobbleheads four times a year and stand out and sweat my ass off in the heat, getting elbowed on Utah Street at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for a 4 o'clock opening to get a Jim Palmer shirt. Like, I don't know how they treat their customers. It's not much better than they treat me, except I don't accept it. And I don't pay for it, but other people do. My buddy's got $1,000 left. I got a couple of buddies that I'm actually going out to Costas on Friday and watching the ponies and going to the state fair, who did the same thing as a business. They're like, "All right, look, we like baseball. We hated Peter. We didn't want to give him any money. Peter doesn't own it now. They won. I mean, they've been winning. They got good young players. Let's give them $2,500. Let's give them three. Let's buy a membership, and we'll take some clients out, and we'll go six times this year." And now the end of the summer, they went opening day. They got a couple grand. How many people this year, and Katie Greig should know this number. If I ran the place, I'd know it. Every person that's eating money right now, or feeling like they got to run out there and buy a $140 box seat just to get rid of their money 3 weeks from now. Maybe the Dodgers, maybe people just piss all their Birdland money to go see Shohei if he pitches next week. I mean, that's cool, right? But for me, I don't understand the mindset of that, and I don't understand how my buddy Howard Scherr is not more angry after all of these years that he's looking down and seeing $1,000 on his app and saying, "Well, that's gone, and now they want another 1,000 3 weeks from now. It's due 3 weeks from now for next year." What they've done to their fans with the renewals, and you were the guy in the suit having Mr. Big comes down the hallway and say, "We bought Fred Lynn. We gotta make some more money. Let's charge more for tickets." I don't know what to say, but if I sat in front of them, I'd say, "Have you gone out and talked to your customers?" Because I clearly they didn't. And Katie Greig doesn't know anybody in this city, including me.
I look at my assessment of what's happening is, first of all, I have a really brief story about a person that was involved in ownership. I'm not going to say it any more than that, who said, "When do you think a good time would be to announce our price increase?" And I said, "Never." And he said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "No, you mean," I said, "No." I said, "If you win the World Series, the day after you win the World Series, I would announce a price increase." And he said, he was asking me to kind of get more involved in it. I said, "You never want to announce a price increase, but there are other ways for you to rescale your business." This goes for anything that doesn't look like a price increase. Now, prices are going to
Ice
increase.
cream companies made 16 ounces,
Right.
14.8.
Shrinkflation.
Right. So that I remember that as a product idea, right?
So there are ways to do it, but when you're announcing a change in your business practice, people are going to pick up on one or two or three things in the media, and that's going to be your headline, but that's to be understood. But Larry Lucchino was important about this. We did price increases a lot, fair enough, because you have to increase based on your cost. But there was always an opportunity to say, what can we do to lower prices in certain areas? So I remember time, there were a couple of things about Larry that stick out to me. Number one is, if we would increase prices in certain sections, we would decrease prices in other sections, right? Did that mean anything? Well, it meant something to somebody that was the value customer. If you were pricing me out here, at least I might be able to do it over here. And the other thing was, I remember standing around the batting cage after the ballpark opened and there was a lot of demand and all of that. And he said, "Do you think we've made a mistake selling all of our tickets in advance?" And I said, "What do you mean? Of course we're going to sell them when we can." And he said, "I think there needs to be room for people to buy something the day of the game. That's the fan that can't pay in advance for whatever reason, but can pay $10 for a grandstand, outfield seat day of game." And there was a lot to that, and that actually changed the policy where you actually could buy that. So my point in all that is there's a mentality of the fan that you have to take into account. And the one thing that in this recent change that they made was they removed the 13-game plan. And the 13-game plan is goes back, it's almost a heritage to the Orioles because it was started at a time when it was difficult to sell tickets. And the entire designated hitter regime and all that that came about, the 13-game plan was something very unique to Baltimore because it allowed you to go just on Sundays if you wanted, because there were 13 Sundays to the baseball season. It allowed you to see virtually every team once if you wanted to, and then you could supplement your plan to do it. So there was a certain mentality to do it. And I think there was something very Baltimore about the 13-game plan.
I
Well,
own
now,
season tickets. I'm a
yeah, right,
stakeholder.
exactly,
Right.
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So now they've backed that down to 10. There's a lot less to it, but basically 13 now is 20. And there's a, you can exchange 30% of your dollars. There's certain techniques to do it. But the point being is sometimes there are certain things about your community that I think if you recognize, it's just like Cracker Barrel the other day, right? Cracker Barrel makes a big, spends millions to make a logo change. And their community says, "We hate that. Why are we changing?" And so I think there's something to the 13-game plan, the mentality of how you approach that in the marketplace and the psychology. But having said that, we know for certain that the way the team had been run prior to David Rubenstein and Michael Arougheti buying the team, the business practices of the team were decades behind where other teams were in terms of their pricing of tickets, allocation, scheming of 20, 40, 80 game plans. They're trying to make up for many, many years where it was just a hodgepodge of policy. And whether it's going to be successful or not in Baltimore, it remains to be seen. But I can assure you that the business practices of the team were at least 10 years behind, I would say, the average, because the one thing that you get when you buy a baseball team or any team in any sport, as soon as you walk in the door, the league gives you a bunch of data that shows you where you are in the context of every other team. Average ticket price, number of tickets sold. They give you this entire data set that says, here's where you stand. You're 27th in this, you're 25th in this, you're whatever you are. And I can assure you that those numbers that they inherited with this ownership team were in those bottom 20s across the board in a lot of things.
So Major League
Payroll.
Baseball had access to Angelos' numbers and
They have
everybody
access
else's
to
to
everybody's
compare.
numbers.
I
And they
didn't know
have,
that. I thought
and
they
they
were more
have,
private businesses than
no.
that the Yankees wouldn't be telling anybody how much
But
money they're
they,
really making.
no. They look, they even have a group in each league now. In basketball, it was famous because it was called TEAMBO. The acronym was TEAMBO, Team Operations, Team Business Operations, whatever. And David Stern had a group of young executive MBAs and recent grads who did nothing but analyze how each team was doing. And David, if you were in the bottom third of any category, season tickets, he would literally send somebody from the league office to be in your office every day until it changed.
You're on alert. If you're in
You're
the
on
bottom third, you're on alert.
Exactly. You're on alert.
Well, there are
And
books written
so,
about the bottom 20% or the bottom 10%, right? Like that's got to
exactly.
change. And when the
Yeah.
Cincinnati Bengals and the Arizona Cardinals and the Baltimore Orioles and the Pittsburgh Pirates, these dreg franchises, LA Clippers forever, like they couldn't. It didn't matter if you sent anybody to Cincinnati to try to help the Bengals. They didn't want to be helped, right? Like there is that independent part of all the whack job owners that have been awful over our lifetime, right?
Right, but when that's right. So one of the reasons you get approved to come in is you're willing to look at that team. Now, if you're buying the Mets and you're Steve Cohen, that's a different situation. But if you're buying a team at Baltimore or Tampa or wherever, they're going to share with you all that information and say, our expectation is that you'll make this better, and here's how you're going to give us your plan for how you're going to do that. So anyhow, point being is they're in the process of catching up. Are they trying to catch up all in one year? I don't know. What remains to be seen, but they're rescaling how people attempting to rescale how people buy tickets in this community. For the longest time, it's been a certain way, and you would expect some pushback. What you hope is that for every ticket holder that you lose, you're able to find somebody else to fill that spot, and that's why you hire analytics folks and leadership and ticket sellers and all that, is to fill those holes every time somebody steps back from their commitment to the team.
What do you say to my people who are stuck with a bunch of money on their app? I'm just thinking to myself, I can't imagine, to your point, it's religion, right? Like I said to Howard, who else would rip you off of $1,000 that they took from you 8 months ago and you didn't use it, and you would go back and give them another couple grand a month from now on top of it for next year where there's no pro I mean, there's no saying the team's going to be better, the experience is going to be better, you're going to want to go more. So this is what I said to him. I'm like, why do you buy season tickets? Like, that's
Well,
the
that's the
why
issue.
for me. I
Right.
can go
Yeah.
every single
Right.
night, anytime I want, based on the weather. I'm in the mood. I'm not in the mood. Who's pitching? All of that. Like, I have not figured out the balance. And this would be true for concerts, Marty. And before we go, I do want to do the bands that were unappreciated. You gave me that friendly text a couple months ago. I made a freaking list, but you had me thinking about it in the middle of the
Good. Good.
Spandau Ballet.
Okay.
But Live Aid probably stirred it all up as well.
Yeah.
But I would just say, like, I don't understand anyone that would give them thousands of dollars based on the last 30 years, not Aparicio versus Angelos or free the none of that. Just on what you're getting, what you're giving, and your expectation. I never buy concert tickets ahead of time, especially in an outdoor event, because I don't want to be stuck with them. I don't want to have to relist them. And I always seem to get in. And I always seem to get in for far less money than anybody else does. All the time, you talk about the value customer. Here I am. I think their real challenge is how do you snooker my buddy Howard into pulling his credit card back out to get something that he bought last year that he is. This is like buying a second stationary bike that's in your basement you didn't
Yeah,
use. You
right.
know, and I'm blown away at the power of the brand. Bob Leffler once said, their brand's so big it'll last your lifetime. And I'm like, well, I mean, somebody did say a sucker was born every minute, but the on-field thing that's happened to them this year has been so devastating to people who love baseball. But this price increase on top of how many people I know that gave them money for the first time in 30 years and feel underserved by it or unmoved by it. I don't understand the philosophy. When I say to Howard, why do you buy? Well, Orioles and your discount, I got a picture. A lot. I'm like, you didn't even go. You didn't even go. You gave them the money, all these things that these perks. Like, I don't know that they can get enough perks together to get me to give them a couple of grand when I don't have to. And I can go wherever whenever I want, sit wherever I want. Like, the philosophy of my ideology, they're fighting that every day against anybody who's sensible. I mean, you can go to an Oreo game anytime you want and sit anywhere you want. Why would I give them money? And that's a fundamental proposition for me.
Yeah, so I would compare that to when I worked for the team and other teams. I'd go into a client's office and they would pull out their drawer and say, I have all these unused tickets. What should I do? There's plans for that. There's ways to engage those people. There's exchange policies. There's a number of things, liberal exchange policies
They've done a
that you
great
can
job with
do.
that, by the way, because Bob Footlick and Bob Pinckner and people that we knew a million years ago, when the team went sour, they would have stacks of tickets. They would hold them up for me. And I was one of the 50 people they call every Friday trying to give tickets away. And when you couldn't give tickets away, once Sidney Ponson and David Segui came in, this was a marketplace issue.
So there are many ways that they can handle it, and you know, they're in the modern electric, so they know the analytics of pretty much, you know, if somebody, like, if you bought a ticket and you didn't go, it doesn't matter what sport today, the secondary, the ticketing systems are such that you're going to get an email the next day that says, "Hey, we missed you yesterday. Tell us what, like, you know, what was that?" But the point, I was going to make the larger point is, the attempts have always been to get people to buy in advance, because once you buy in advance, presumably you're a ticket holder, you know, for a long time. But the challenge has been this introduction of the secondary market, the SeatGeeks, the Ticketmasters, and all that, where I don't have to buy a ticket from the team. I can buy it on the secondary market as long as somebody bought it originally and could resell it. And that's the challenge that they have with people, with like the people that you're talking to, which is, why would I buy from the team versus wait and buy a week before the game on SeatGeek, take as many tickets as I want, make sure I want to go, make sure the weather's nice, you know, whatever it is to do. And that's where they've tried to offset that with Birdland memberships, perks, benefits. At some point, the team on the field is the one that's going to determine whether you're going to buy frequently or not. So there's only a certain amount of rewards. It's like airline miles. At some point, you know, how many airline miles am I going to get? Am I ever going to use? And how much does it cost me to get those airline miles? So that's their challenge. Look, like I said, I just want to reiterate, the business practices of the team are being modernized. That's not a story that anybody wants to tell, because, you know, no one cares about that. But underneath everything that's going on there, they're trying to bring those business practices and selling practices and revenue and monetization into the middle 2025, and not like it's 2015. Quite frankly, that's kind of what's occurring. And we'll see on the other side if it's going to be successful. They're going to need to get the All-Star game here. They're going to need to do some things that cause people to want to buy and stay committed for several years, because they want something like access to the All-Star game when it comes back to Baltimore.
Marty, you and I have done a lot off the field, on the field. I know what a big baseball fan, you know, what an observer of the sport you are. What do you think of the team? I mean, just in a general sense, I mean, as a fan of the franchise, clearly, if they have money and they can go buy a couple pitchers, Rogers things worked out great. Bradish is back now for a minute, at least. So we've had some sunshine this week in that way in
That's right.
regard to what they can be. But if the young guys don't hit the ball, and nothing's going to, if the young guys don't mature and become star players, they're going to have a problem. And giving all the money to Bisaccia, I thought that was so weird. And Rubenstein showing up on a Saturday afternoon press conference in the middle of the Ravens Redskins game, like, just weird all the way around. And I felt like it was a little bit of a desperate smack for a headline, but also he's the only guy they could sign. They can't sign Boris guys. So fans are clamoring for something that they just marrying the girl they can't marry. And to some degree, this last place slog that they've had and how bad they've been on the field has been just worrisome for me. And I'm really worried that Rubenstein doesn't know what he's doing, because I met him and I walk up to people all the time. I don't have any sense. I don't see any signs of life down there that this new group gives me any confidence at all that they're maybe the baseball side of Elias drafting players. I don't think I would have fired him for hiding after firing Brandon Hyde for 3 days. Like, to me, Mike Elias is not a leader. He is not inspiring the fan base, motivating ticket buyers, making the team so great that he's not expendable. And I keep worried about him a little bit, because I'm thinking if they were going to fire his ass, they'll do it October 3rd, and he'll be the first and last to know, because, like, they're not going to bleed that out. But it certainly feels like he's going to survive this, Marty, as the arm
Yeah,
goes.
look, yeah, I do. I think given the players that they got back in those trade deadline deals, if you look at it analytically, they got a lot of players back who were second, third, or even fourth round draft picks within the last 2 years, many of them pitchers. And so my presumption is that those are players that they probably would have drafted had they had the opportunity. But in that rebalancing and getting rid of the nine players that went out the door at the trade deadline, they got back players who I think they must believe are on the cusp of perhaps in the, particularly pitchers, because they need not only starting pitchers, but they're going to need bullpen depth. And look, this year they may set the record for the number of players on the roster. I think the Miami Marlins had 70 players a few years ago on their roster. The Orioles are up to mid 65, something like that. That tells you that they're just churning through, players, and they're going to need that. But I agree. I think there's going to be next year for Mike Elias, but I think that might be the defining year. Like, can you get enough talent in the pipeline again beyond the Gunnar Hendersons and the Jackson Holidays and the Samuel Basayos, people like that? I also think there'll be some deals this year. I think Rutschman is probably a consideration because he'll have 2 years of control. Mountcastle's another guy they probably held on to a little too long. And so this will be a defining year for the on-the-field product. And they're going to have to come out next season and hit the ground running. I think they're going to have a, a 30-19 start in 49 games instead of the other way around for people to believe again that this is something that's real, and they're willing to continue to spend to get behind it.
Is there even a thought, and you won't say this because you wore the suit and did the job, but they're not going to really sell any tickets until that happens, right? I mean, they're not really going to inspire anyone until the middle of May when we look up at Preakness Day and say, are you firing your manager this May? Or, and if they're just 500, if they're just something, that's not going to be good enough either. I just, and my God, we're 40 minutes into this and we're kicking off with the Ravens this week. Ravens might win the Super Bowl on top of this too. And that would really, the
They
Ravens
would.
should have a January kind of year. So at least they're, God, if the Ravens fell apart and they're 5-7 and Lamar's hurt or whatever, we throw the whole year in, out the window in 2025, let alone what's going on down in Washington. But for me, with the football team now moving into focus, this is sort of a last of smoke for the baseball team because they're not going to have a lot of oxygen between now and whenever they deal Rutschman or whenever they sign a pitcher or whatever they do. And to your point, they'll probably screw that up and do it on a Friday afternoon. The weekend the Ravens are playing the Bengals or something, So they can only make so much news if the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl. I don't know that the baseball team's going to be a that I'm going to talk a lot about them in the offseason.
Yeah, no, I look, once the season's over, you're right, the Ravens will dominate. It up until the winter meetings, which are usually in December, or the general managers' meetings are in November, there's not going to be that much to talk about. Will they be able to make that splash signing? Because you're right, if you want to sell tickets in the fall, you're going to have to make a, or the early winter, you're going to have to make that splash
Does that
signing.
sell tickets?
It does. It
It
does. If you
does.
look at the numbers, you look at the Juan Soto's, you look at the other players that have signed,
Well, that's
Machado's.
real. That's $500 million.
I mean,
I'm
if
talking
you,
about Corbin Burns gets dealt over. Did they really sell tickets that day? I don't think they did. I mean, I think they get headlines when they, but they, they got an
well, that's
ace.
yeah, that's a different kind of, like I said, I think you need a splash signing, which is you need an anchor tenant on your pitching staff. I think Bradish could do it, but who knows? He's been injured. I think Rogers could do it, but who knows? He's been off and on. You need that. If you can get one, either through acquisition or through free agent signing, it's like having a, it's like having the mall at your local area. You need an anchor tenant for the mall. You've got to have somebody that can anchor that pitching staff, and then you can build the rest from there. But that's what they're going to have to. I'm sure they know that, but it'll be difficult. Players are not going to really want to sign until they see how the market is developing. Players generally don't like to go first because they think they might under value themselves. So, but all in all, it'll be a, an important off season on the field, off the field, but for the business of the team, renovations to the stadium, what's it going to look like next year on opening day? What's the plan beyond that for the rest of the renovation? How soon could they get the All-Star game? What's going to happen in a work stoppage in a year from this December?
Ooh.
All those different things are going to be part of the zeitgeist of the team's communication efforts.
I mean, while the Ravens are undefeated right now and they're going to win the Super Bowl, so that's all good. Marty Conway is here. He is the sports professor of all things business at Georgetown University, longtime Major League Baseball executive. Did I leave everything? Do you have anything else you want? Because I think you had some Hall of Fame stuff. You got a couple
I
things
did
you
a
talked to
couple
me about.
minutes.
Yeah.
They just had the Orioles Hall of Fame, and all good news to Joe Ursulak, Adam Jones, and Tom Davis, who all deservedly to go in. It caused me to go look at the list. I hadn't looked at it in a long, long time. And I read down the list, and I saw a Jerry Hufberger, Harry Dalton, Hank Peters, all the way down, Frank Cashin, all these fantastic people. And it occurred to me that several names were missing, but most importantly, Edward Bennett Williams, Larry Lucchino, and then ultimately, I think you can go on down the line to Janet Marie Smith. But in the first two cases, I was there on May 2nd, 1988, when the team had come back from a miserable start, and Ed Williams came into the building, drawn from cancer, made the decision to sign that lease to pledge the team for the next 30 years. He passed away 103 days later. He was not in a condition to do that. He could have easily deferred that decision later, right? And who knows what would have happened. But the fact that he's not recognized in the Orioles Hall of Fame to me is a huge hole. And the second thing is, without an Edward Bennett Williams, there's no Larry Lucchino. Larry Lucchino is in the Hall of Fame of the Padres, the Red Sox, and the Woo Sox, the Worcester Red Sox of the AAA affiliate of the Boston Red Sox. If not for what he did in Baltimore, he's not even at those organizations. He's not in Boston. He's not in San Diego. He's not in Worcester. And I just can't get my head around that that hasn't been recognized. And then ultimately, he brings Janet Marie Smith on board. There's Doug Hoffman. There's all these other people that if Ed Williams doesn't make that decision in May 2nd, 1988, who knows what the history of the team is that we're sitting here talking about? And there's not even a simple recognition anymore of what he did. We've got other owners in the Orioles Hall of Fame. It's not just that. We've got other contributors. You know, Larry was every much almost sometimes a general manager alongside of whoever they had hired. So those are the kind of things that I think I just look at that and I'm like, there's a big piece missing here that the next time they have these kind of meetings, they need to holistically look at that and say, maybe we should catch up. Maybe instead of having one contributor per year, Tom Davis was it this year with the Herm Armstrong Award. Maybe we need to open that up a little bit and catch up because you're never going to be able to truly recognize if you're just thinking one person a year for the next 5 years. And I just think a simple recognition of that, as well as some other people who contributed along the way. I saw the other day that Chip Mason passed away at the age of, I think, almost 90. He was one of the first people to put his name in the stadium from a local
Well,
advertising.
he was
There's
always
people.
a guy that was rumored to be, if Peter had died 30
Yeah,
years ago, he would have been
exactly.
owner, right?
I mean, there was Bob Futlich, there was at Bond Distributing, Miller Coors, there was Robin Bissell at SK. Those are people who put money out there, corporate money and their own personal money, and kept the team in balance before it moved to the new ballpark. And then, of course, we went on a run of 4 or 5 years where every game sold out and it looked easy. But there were times that it was not easy to sell people on the team. And those are people who said, I'll do it. And other people followed them in. And I just think that period is not recognized today. And somehow it needs to do that. So that's
Well,
my
in the
point.
modern world, Marty, you know this, and I'll end on this. You know, they need a local Chip Mason. They need a Henry
Yeah.
Rosenberg. They
Right,
need a
right.
Frank Bramble. They don't have that anymore.
Yep.
And the goodwill that was there 30 years ago is either aged, gone, or offended to be able to bring people in. I don't know where the Mr. Bigs are here that are going to step up and say, I'm in with you, Arrigetti, Mr. New York guy, and Rubenstein, Mr. I almost bought the DC team, but I only wanted the baseball. Like, I don't know where the Baltimore champions are, other than, I mean, I'm Baltimore positive. Where are the rich people that are going to step up and say, we need to keep baseball here? There was no one. Rubenstein came from the outside to do that, right?
Yeah,
So
that's right.
I'm very perplexed by all of this. And this time next year, write it down, Marty, because we've known each other a long time. We're gonna be talking about a work stoppage. You know, that train's coming for baseball, and that's really the saddest part of all of this, because that's the train hitting the wall if they try that crap a year from now.
I think so.
Marty Conway. Love him, appreciate him, known him a long time, always educates me, always educates our audience. Sometimes we fight a little bit, but I always learn something. He's the good professor of all things, Georgetown University. Did I get a B plus in the class? Maybe B minus. Just don't
Outstanding.
give me a C, man.
Yeah, no, you're moving on to the next level. You're definitely passing.
All right, I'm at 101. Good to know. Marty Conway here. Happy football season to everybody out there, but we still got to cover the business of baseball and Camden Yards as they renovate here in this offseason and the diggers come to dig things up, including the Jim Henneman press box. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive, even when it's negative, but we're trying to be positive.